Hi guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Rafaela. Hello, I'm so excited. I've got in front of me my dear friend Emma. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hi. So my name is Emma. I am Australian and I'm super stoked to be speaking with Rafa today.
Can you tell me how you say your last name?
Rahmani.
Rahmani.
Rahmani. Well, it's like, you know, you got different pronunciations. You've kind of got the Iranian pronunciation, which is Rahmani.
Rahmani.
And then you kind of have like the white people pronunciation, which is Rahmani.
Rahmani. Okay, which one do you usually say when people ask you?
Honestly, Rahmani. I don't have the energy to hear other people try and say it like in this full-on Middle Eastern way.
Like what I just did.
What exactly? Like exactly what you just did, because I'm sorry, it still sounded wrong.
Being called out the first second on this podcast.
Let's go.
And I was literally feeling so proud of myself, like I got it. Okay,
all right,
so we can see that she has a little bit of a spice. So where does your last name come from? And you know, maybe you can start off telling us a little bit of your upbringing. And
for sure. So my last name is from Iran. And I was born in Australia, but my parents had migrated to Iran in the 80s. And yeah, I was born in Sydney, super, super beautiful place to grow up. And then at about 7 years old, I moved to this tiny, teeny little surf town called Tweedheads.
Oh my God.
And so I had like a beautiful childhood where I spent every weekend at the beach, and in my family home, I had a swimming pool, and like I lived next to a river. So literally every day after school, I was swimming in the river and then in the swimming pool, and just like, it doesn't really have winters there. So it was just in the water all day, every day. Yeah. And then at 14 years old, I moved back to Sydney and kind of graduated high school there, went to university, finished uni, and then moved to Germany like four or five years ago. Worked and studied there. And now I'm living in Barcelona.
Woo! Woo! And this is where we met. And yes, the reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast is because every time we meet, we always talk about how we've had such a similar experience.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I was born in Brazil and then I moved to Canada, and obviously, you know, that was challenging in its own ways, being an immigrant in another country. But you were born in Sydney.
Yeah, I was born in Sydney. So because this is a podcast, people don't know what I look like, but I have brown skin and I have dark features, so I don't look Australian.
Yeah.
So even though I have an Australian accent and I feel Australian, I don't look it. So it was a weird experience growing up in a country where, you know, that's the culture you kind of have around you, but then at home you have a different culture, and then like your school friends kind of think you're a little bit weird, or you bring like weird food to school, or it's, I don't know. So it was constantly, you're stuck between two different worlds.
Yeah. Did you feel like you had to choose one or the other?
Oh, I felt that's a really good question. I didn't feel like I had to choose, but I felt like I had to suppress. So especially, you know, in this period where I was living in this beach town, like everyone there was white and blonde and surfed. And my family was like probably one of the only Middle Eastern families there. So it was super not cool to be from there. And, you know, nowadays it's like really lucky that it's kind of almost become trendy to not be Caucasian.
Sure.
Because people really have an open heart and open mind to learn about cultures. But back then in like the early 2000s, it was kind of like bizarre to not be white in this town. So I was always trying to kind of do things to make me feel white, and kind of be embarrassed about things that like my family would do, or I don't know, like I said before, like food that my mum would make. If my mum would give me leftovers to school the next day and it was leftover Persian food, I'd be like, no mum, that's so embarrassing, I just want a sandwich and chips. Which is, yeah, and nowadays like the food is amazing, and it's crazy that I didn't want it back then.
And you just have learned how to embrace it. But I'm sure it was a journey. So when did your parents move to Australia?
I think like 85 or 4, something like that. And I was born in 94.
And you're born. So they had already been living there for a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you have siblings?
Yeah. So I have an older brother and an older sister. But we actually, I think we all experienced quite similar situations. Mm. Even though they're a bit older, we don't really talk about it that much, but I think we all had just experiences of feeling like, yeah, we were just too brown for the school that we were at and the society that we were in, which is so bizarre.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've spoken with you about this, and obviously it was a journey for you, and you were saying that you've suppressed a lot of, you know, those feelings, and you've talked about how you were acting in a way that you wanted to belong, you know, to that other culture. So doing things, you know, to fit in and those kind of things.
Yeah. This is something that me and you both bonded about. So we both went through this phase of absolutely damaging our hair and making us look blonde.
And I even went as far as wearing blue contacts.
Oh my god, true. Yeah, I tried to do that, but my eyes rejected it. So unfortunately, my body couldn't go that far. But I tried. I totally tried. I was always dyeing my hair since I think I was like 14 or 15. And then once I could start to go really blonde and I started working and had the money to do it, I loved it because I basically thought if my hair was my natural color, I looked way too Middle Eastern. Mm. And I thought that, you know, whenever my hair was blonde and I was tanned and it was summer, people would think I was like Brazilian. They actually would think, which is your nationality. Oh yeah. And I was like, oh my God. people would think I was like Latin American or Mexican and stuff like that. So, I was kind of trying to achieve that because I didn't want people to guess that, the country I was from or the area I was from, which is so messed up. It's
crazy to live with that.
Yeah. And then the funny thing is, and this is where we go full circle, is that I think like at the beginning of 2021, I went back to my full natural hair color. Mm-hmm. And honestly, even until now, I'm constantly getting compliments from friends being like, I just love you with your natural hair color so much.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, wow, I should have done this 10 years ago.
I agree. Even when I saw the pictures of you blonde,
yeah,
I was like, yes, obviously you look good, but you look so much better in your natural beauty.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Same as when I saw the photos of you with the blue contacts and the blonde hair. Oh, so funny.
Oh my God. So do you remember having a moment? Because I remember having that moment where I was feeling so depressed, and I had a different experience from it because I actually moved there when I was 13.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, I didn't speak the language, and that was extremely hard for me, you know. And I remember having this conscious thought. I'm thinking, if I become just like them, I will finally be accepted. And it was literally, and I never have forgotten this moment. I remember I was 15 years old. I was laying down in bed. It was super late at night. At this time, I was having insomnia. I just couldn't sleep. I remember crying over and over again. I want to go back to Brazil. I want to go back to Brazil. And the depression was just like through the roof. I remember, you know, when I speak about that time, I speak about like this time of like darkness. Mm. Everything I could see was gray. Like there was no light.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, okay, if I become just like them, then I'll be okay and they will accept me. And literally it was from that moment on that it was like I was on a mission.
Wow.
I started dyeing my hair, started doing all these things, you know. Do you remember making a conscious decision of trying to act the way that you're perceiving the people around you? Or do you think it was because you were brought up there, it came more natural to you?
Yeah, I think the latter. Like, I think for me, it was kind of a bit of a subconscious thing. But I do remember having this moment. I was in year two. So was that like 8 years old? And I remember like there was the cool people in my grade, and the cool people were the ones that, you know, surfed and super tanned and had blonde hair and
typical Australian.
Yeah, typical Aussie and like really good at sports, and you know, that was the cool group. And I remember having this moment when I was 8 years old, just thinking like, I'm cool too. I want to be friends with them. Like, what can I do to be friends with them? Like, I want to be friends with the cool kids. Oh my God, it's so trash when I think that I used to, like, I thought like this. I mean, you're a kid.
So many people can relate.
Yeah, and I remember having this moment, like, just thinking this. I remember picturing my family home, like, where I was thinking this. And I just, like, tried to manifest it so badly, being friends with, like, the cool group. And I ended up being friends with the cool group. Because, you know, I started hanging out with them and whatever, but it was still really hard for me to fit in because I wasn't sporty. I was chubby as a kid and I'm super uncoordinated. and mm-hmm. like my family like wasn't cool that surfed, and we didn't live in the cool like beach part, like we lived in like the not so cool part of Tweed Heads, and you know, like, so even though I was still hanging out with them and I was trying really hard to fit in, it was exhausting because I was constantly trying to do the things that me and my family just simply were not.
So
and then it kind of became a gradual thing. And in high school, because then I moved back to Sydney, and in Sydney it's a lot more different because it's a way more multicultural city, and I'm still quite close with like my girlfriends from high school, but they weren't doing anything to make me feel like I didn't belong. But I think it was just this like overall unconscious kind of thing where, you know, I wasn't allowed to have sleepovers because my parents were just really strict. Even if it was like at a girlfriend's house, like I think only in like year 11 or year 12, my parents only just started letting me do sleepovers at my school friend's house. Mm. So, you know, little things like this would still just be like, oh, Emma, you're so Persian.
Oh,
you know,
makes sense.
And even though I love them and I'm still close friends with them now, it's just like these little actions that just would always make me feel a bit different.
Mm, I feel you. And you just can't help it. When you live in a society where most people are different from you, it's something that lives with you, yeah. You know? And today, I think it is true what you're saying, that people have more of the benefit of living in a country, not in a country, but in an era where people are appreciating other people's cultures and nationalities. But, you know, I felt so ashamed for not speaking the language and for being an immigrant, and, you know, so many things that was happening at home. I just hid from everybody, never wanted to talk about certain things because I never wanted to be that other person. And even though people don't say like, oh, you are weirdo because you're from there, but like you just feel,
yeah, you feel different.
You just feel different. And
yeah,
especially at that young age, all we want is just to belong.
Yeah, for sure.
And the feeling of belonging is, I am loved, I am accepted, and these are like things that we all need, you know?
Yeah. I still find it so interesting that you had a similar experience, even though you're from Brazil. And like, you know, like, if I grew up in the town that I came from, and if I was from Brazil, I don't think I would have had any problems fitting in, because, you know, Brazil is seen as a cool country, and it's not portrayed badly in the media like the Middle East is, and so on. So I just find it just like, it hurts, it breaks my heart that you were still going through the same thing. I mean, regardless, every country is just as important as others, but like, it really doesn't matter where you're from. People still go through this stuff.
What were some of the things that really hurt your feelings that people said about you, or you just overheard things?
Oh, I will never forget. There was in year 5, I think, one of the cool boys one of the cool surfer boys in class, he called me a terrorist in front of the whole class.
Oh my god. Yeah. Just like,
I don't remember. I don't remember. I don't remember in which context it was, but it was something like, just da 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 da, you're a terrorist or something like that.
Wow.
And I just like, I just felt so little when that happened. I just had nothing to say back. And it's quite disgusting because you'd know what type of home he would come from, because like, kids don't just learn this stuff out of nowhere. They usually, sometimes it comes 100%, from the parents.
Especially if it's from a kid that's 5 years old.
Yeah. Year five, 10 or 11 or something. Yeah. And I remember like the teacher didn't really do that much about it. I think the teacher was also shocked himself. I remember he didn't really have my back. He was kind of just like, ah, don't say that. And that was it. Mm.
And what were the other kids' reaction?
No one did anything. Mm. No one did a thing. I just remember feeling so excluded when that happened. It was a horrible, horrible, horrible feeling.
Wow.
And I was so ashamed. Yeah.
I'm sorry that you had to go through this.
Oh, it's okay. We can talk about it now.
Yeah. I'm sure that, you know, probably for some time, maybe you know, just felt so ashamed of yourself for even being associated with something so horrible as that.
Yeah, for sure. It's, and I think a lot of it has to do with the media, because the big problem was I'm from Iran, and people would always think Iran is Iraq, and Iraq has a lot of war and ISIS and Islam and all of that stuff, but they're actually two different countries. And that just goes to show, I mean, it doesn't matter, even if I was from Iraq, I'm still not a terrorist, but it goes to show how extremely ignorant people are, that I'm not even from the country that they think I'm from, and they still think I'm a terrorist, you know, like,
wow.
Yeah, so that just goes to show how uneducated people were in the place I grew up.
For sure. I'm glad that you got away. And I think things start changing for you, right?
Yeah.
At some point. And I feel like, obviously, here in Barcelona now, the more diverse you are, the more appreciated you are.
Yeah,
it's incredible. So what happened after high school when you moved back to Sydney? And can you speak a little bit about that?
So after high school, I'm trying to think. I wasn't ashamed of my culture so much in Sydney when I moved back there from Tweedheads. But I think I was still, you know, trying to do things to like seem more white. So that was like, you know, the blonde hair and all of that stuff, and dressing like a basic bitch and like super tight dresses and all of that stuff.
Oh
and
my heels God.
And all of that. Yeah. Dressing super trash. But I wasn't ashamed of my culture. I just was still trying to do things to just not look too Middle Eastern. And then I moved to Germany for my Erasmus year in 2016. And what actually changed for me and really helped me a lot is that when I was living in Hamburg, all of like the friends I made, they all saw me as an Australian, like, because that was my accent. That was where I came from. That was where I was born. And like, I was just known as an Aussie. And then people were like, oh, that's also cool that your parents are from Iran. But they were not really interested in that because it wasn't really showing in my day-to-day behavior and culture and all of that stuff. And then when I was like, oh, I'm actually from, well, my background is actually from Iran, people be like, oh my God, that's so cool. And also randomly, Germans have like a really high travel rate to Iran. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah, Germans are so random. But a lot of times when I said this to a German, they were either like, I really want to go there, or I've been there. And this never happened to me in Australia. Never, never, never. Like in Australia, I'd be like, I'm Persian. And people are like, what country is that? And I'm like, oh, Iran. So, yeah, I think the fact those were kind of the two things that helped a lot, moving somewhere where people didn't really like say, but where are you really from? Because I'm brown. And then also thinking it's so cool that my parents are from Iran. And then that helped me to like kind of begin my journey of embracing it.
Wow. Do you just feel so much better now that you have it's like overcome this? Because when we live trying to be somebody else, we were living as a shell of ourselves.
Yeah.
But when we actually embrace who we are, it becomes so much more. How has it been and how do you feel now, like mentally, you know, has it helped your mental health?
Yeah, I think it's helped my confidence in that, like, I'm not trying to hide anything about my background, but before I was. And now that I'm doing my master's in Barcelona, I'm finding it quite therapeutic, like doing, so I'm, oh yeah, I'm doing my master's in photography. And I have to do a main project for the end of the master's and I'm finding it super therapeutic doing it on this topic. And I never would have thought going into the master's, I was going to do it on this. And I'm also writing a thesis and I'm writing my thesis on this. And I feel like this is like me just like expressing and getting rid of all of these like years of like tension and cultural identity crises that I've had. And you know, for my thesis, I'm now looking into like scholarly articles about racism in Australia and where it comes from. And actually, a fun fact, I don't know if I told you this before, but I found an article talking about how Canada and Australia are highly racist countries because they have high migration rates.
Whoa.
Yes, and I thought of you. I was like, oh my God.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This makes so much sense.
Right? Because there's such a high amount of people that they're letting in. The people that are like living there longer are threatened in a really disgusting way. Yeah.
Wow, that makes so much sense. But it's interesting also because I, in general, when I was in Canada, I think mostly, especially in high school, I felt also bullied by other immigrants.
Really? Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh,
which,
my God.
Which I thought was so... I just couldn't really wrap my head around it because, you know, these people potentially could have maybe a little bit of a better understanding about where I was coming from. But, you know, lots of people from different backgrounds and from immigrant families were still bullying me a lot. It wasn't only...
What?
I didn't only feel that from, you know, the white community. But, yeah, I just... the thing about that, and I'm like, wow, just no compassion in a way for somebody who might have experienced like something similar to you. But I think also because Canada has been receiving a lot of from all over for many years, maybe some of these people, they were born there, so they didn't really have maybe a similar understanding to what I went through moving there after being, and especially being 13.
Yeah.
It's such a pivotal age, and you're trying to figure out who you are. And I remember it was the first year I was there, 13, and in the summer they have these open pools, you know, people can go to these community pools to swim. And I went to this community swimming pool, and these kids were calling me a slut. Because I had, you know, the Brazilian bikini, and it's different from the Canadian bikini.
Of course.
So they could see me right away that I was not from there. And they were literally calling me a slut. And I was 13.
Oh my God. And did you know, like, during the moment that's why? Like, because...
Yeah, I knew, because they were, like, they were calling me a slut and then referring to the fact that I was Brazilian, but obviously I couldn't really understand it, but I could hear slut in Brazil. And then I also had a cousin that was there, and she kind of could translate it a little bit for me.
Oh, because you couldn't speak English, of course.
No, I couldn't speak anything.
Oh my God, of course, that makes it so much more horrible.
And obviously I couldn't defend myself or say nothing, but thankfully the lifeguard that was there, he was this tall white dude, super handsome, but like so nice. I remember him standing up for me and was like, no, do not call her that. And I mean, obviously I can understand what he said, but I just remember him being so upset at the fact that they were calling me this. And it was just like, you know, no, don't call her that. But yeah.
Whoa, that's crazy.
And these are the things. It's you being associated, let's say, with, you know, a terrorist, and then me coming from this country where women are, you know, supposed to be beautiful, but also, you know, they show their body.
So,
for me, it was like, you are a slut because you...
And
also, the bikini did have a Brazilian flag, so there's
no way... Oh, my God!
There's no way I could hide it.
You would have been so Brazilian. You were asking for it.
I was like literally the most fucking Brazilian person you can imagine.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
Cry, can I go back to Brazil?
Oh my gosh, but that's crazy.
It's so crazy.
But it just goes to show like people at that age when they haven't seen the rest of the world and they haven't seen or just... accepted the fact that there's just different cultures and people do things differently, and it's okay if it's different to how you were raised, and that doesn't make the other person a weirdo or a slut or a terrorist or whatever, just makes them different, but in a good way. And
absolutely,
people just need to be taught this growing up. But I think, like, it would be so nice nowadays to grow up in the society that we have now, because, like, you would kind of be praised for being
seriously
different. Everyone is so like politically correct and left, and it's thanks to TikTok. And
you're like, where was this awakening when I was growing up?
Literally. I always think the same with like the queer community too, because like imagine like how it would have been for someone who grew up like queer or gay 50 years ago versus someone now. Such a big difference.
Seriously, what have you learned so far in your thesis? Have you started doing it?
Ooh,
have you started writing it?
Touchy subjects. Yeah, I have, but I'm super behind. with the thesis, I'm looking into basically like how being from a different country, like background wise, but being born in another country, how it affects your behavior growing up. So like how it makes you do things differently to how someone who isn't from that circumstance would behave. I don't have the investigation yet, but that's basically the question I'm asking. But I have to incorporate my photography series with it, which is a whole other mess. So,
wow.
Yeah.
But I think the series that you did with yourself.
Oh yeah.
You know, all those photos of you changing little by little to.
Yeah. Yeah. That one was cool. Yeah, should I explain that one?
Yes,
yeah. So I did this self-portrait series. The brief was Identity, And I did just like one self-portrait image of myself. And then I created 16 versions of it, and in a consecutive line, each version I've made myself look a little bit more Caucasian. So it's like lightening the hair, lightening the skin, lightening the skin under my eyes, pink, like pinkening, mm-hmm. making my lips pinker, changing my eye color and all of these things. And it's this gradual change. We don't really see it when you're comparing the photos next to each other, but you have the first one and the last one next to each other, and it's like, wow. Whoa. And the title was called Please Westernize Me.
Wow.
And when I presented it to my class, I'd also printed out like in hand size all these images of me from like 5-6 years ago with all of my girlfriends who were like super tiny skinny blondes, and like me with them, because I was tall in Australia, so I was like the tall one in the group. And I'm like this tall brown girl with fake blonde hair. And I printed out so many like party photos of us, full face of makeup and super blonde and all of that. And people in my class were like going around, like handing around the photos to each other while they were looking at this work. And they were all like, was that seriously you? Yeah, they didn't realize that was me. So, God.
How was your relationship with makeup growing up?
Yeah, because we spoke about this. I never thought of this question before. Originally, I would think, oh, it's fine. But you know what I just realized? And still to this day, it's the main reason I wear makeup, and when I do wear makeup, is to cover under my eyes that they're dark. Because this is a kind of like Asian, Middle Eastern, Oriental look. And now that I think about it, it's probably my most hated feature of me. And I remember it all started because one day when I was like 10 or 11 years old at school, someone stopped me and they were like, are you tired? And I was like, no, why? And they're like, under your eyes are so dark.
Yeah,
because it's just naturally like that. Like my dad has it, my brother has it, it's just something that's in my genetics, and it's quite common for that part of the world. And so the only reason I actually wear makeup, because like I'm pretty happy with my skin otherwise, and I'm fine with everything else, but only reason I wear makeup is to cover under my eyes, because I hate that it makes me look so dead, tired and Oriental or whatever. But wow. I've also started to slowly embrace that, because every time I complain about it, friends are like, no, I love that about you. And I'm like, oh my God, thanks. But I want to hear about your relationship with makeup, because I think your story is super, super interesting.
Well, basically it started off one step at a time, but it started off early in high school. And basically when I made the decision to just try to be like them, you know, try to be like the girls that I was seeing, I saw that all my friends were wearing a lot of makeup. I'm getting this feeling I'm sharing my most shameful story, which I will, but I'm like feeling the intuition that I can.
Okay.
I've never felt so much shame in my life until this moment, which I went shopping with my mom and our family, and I saw that my friends were wearing this lipstick. And obviously, you know, when you're an immigrant in a new country, you don't have lots of money. And I mean, I just felt that way, you know. Obviously, like, we had money to afford our basic needs, but there wasn't extra money to be buying whatever lipstick that I wanted to. So I felt that I couldn't have it. So I went and I stole this lipstick. And I put it in my pocket, and this is me with my family.
Wow.
I'm walking out of the shop, the security stops me, and they're like, you, come back. You just stole, you know, something, whatever. And literally, I was like, I just like almost died inside. My mom comes, and she's in disbelief, obviously. Yeah. And I couldn't admit it for literally 2 weeks. My mom was crying for like forever. Aww. She was so upset because obviously she had brought me to this country, and she had seen me kind of lose myself, straightening my hair all the time, wearing makeup, and now trying to steal things, you know, to look like the other. So she was so upset. She was almost like saying that she wanted to go back to Brazil, and it was, for her, was extremely challenging. And I told her that I didn't do it, so I lied at first, and she believed me. And obviously, because you couldn't really see it in the camera, but obviously you kind of could see it. But then, you know, when you're in denial, you don't want to admit it. And then eventually when I told my mom, like, I did it, I just remember, like, oh, like, the shame to be caught stealing. And it's interesting because I spoke about this story with some of my white friends and from Canada, and then they're like, oh, like, whatever. No. It wasn't a big deal for them, but when the cops showed up, they were yelling at me and yelling at my mom, like, saying things like, why would you bring your kids to our country if they're gonna come and steal our things?
Seriously.
Like, oh my God. They were being so fucking rude. Wow. And they gave my mom a fine of, like, $500.
Whoa!
And none of my other friends ever got a fucking fine for stealing anything from a fucking store. But obviously, they gave me that, and my mom had to pay that, and it wasn't easy for her to do it. Yeah. So obviously, you know, like, it was extremely shameful for me. But so then, even though after that happened, I was still trying to wear makeup, but obviously I was not stealing things anymore, you know. I started working quite early, as soon as I could, basically, and started buying things, foundation, blush, like, whatever you name it. But then I started realizing that I started feeling ugly without it, and I couldn't leave my house without makeup.
Yeah.
So then I was like, fuck, now this is controlling me, you know? And then one day I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go to school without makeup. Oh, and then I decided, I'm gonna go to school without makeup.
I know this story. This is so fucked up.
I literally show up to school without makeup. It's like nobody can talk about anything else. Oh my God, have you seen Raph without makeup? She's so ugly without makeup. And I'm hearing this from, like, guys that maybe I think it's cute, whatever. And it's just basically just telling me what I was thinking and reassuring me of that feeling.
Oh, your insecurities.
Of my insecurities. Yeah. And it was so evil, you know, so evil. And I was like, you know what, whatever, fuck it. But then still, I still felt insecure about not wearing makeup. But then gradually, slowly, little by little, you know, that still took years. You know, that still took maybe like 2-3 years after that. But I had kind of given up foundation and things. So I kind of gradually gave up. But then when I came to Europe and I was just like, you know, living my dreams, traveling, not wearing makeup, and people loved me and they thought I was beautiful, whatever. And I started feeling that a little bit about myself as well. And then I was like, you know what, fuck it. And eventually, I think the last time I wore makeup, it was even, I think it was like just kind of like even for a little bit of a joke, but like, it was the last time, it was one of the first days that I moved to Australia.
Wow, so it's so long
and
ago.
It was and so that was 2015.
Oh my God.
That was 2013. No, that was 2013. The end of 2013, it was basically 2014, so 8 years ago.
Wow.
And ever since then, I literally have never worn anything like makeup. Maybe here and there, my friends want to joke and put stuff on me, you know, but I'm not extremely comfortable wearing it. So, you know, but sometimes, you know, maybe a little blush, but like, how many times have you seen me with makeup?
Never,
right? I almost never wear makeup. And like, almost never is in like, literally never, maybe like 3 times in the past 8 years I've worn blush.
So wild. Yeah, like blush of all things.
Blush, you know what I mean? So yeah,
it's like it's so wild. It's like you have PTSD of makeup. Like you literally cannot put it on your skin.
No, that is literally, and
that's so crazy.
When my friend put makeup on my face, because she has been dying to do that, I literally took it out after 10 minutes because I saw myself and I was like, whoa, this feels like I just went back like 10,000 steps.
Yeah.
Wow. And it just felt like I was completely just going back into a time machine, into a person who was so unhappy and unloving with herself that I was just, no, I cannot do it. But for me, it was my journey, and I do have to acknowledge that other people have different relationships with makeup, and this is not everyone's story.
Yeah.
This is my story, and I think it's beautiful, you know. I see my friends, they have an amazing relationship with the makeup. They wear them, whatever, like, when we're going out, and they look fucking amazing, and I love it, and I love seeing them wear it, and it's so beautiful, and this is truly, honestly, just my experience, and I appreciate it when other people wear it.
But, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Due to your, like, what your relationship with makeup growing up, it just made, it just kind of created a toxic bond between you and the face that you see when it's wearing makeup.
Yeah. I just couldn't see myself beautiful otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so crazy. It's super, super interesting. But I think it's really powerful that, like, you can actually see that now and you're kind of, like, a big fuck you to makeup. Yeah. And you didn't let that insecurity control you, whereas it used to control you before.
Exactly. And I have to give props to myself because I do, like, I'm always trying to overcome these kind of things. And I don't know if it's my nature or what it is, but, you know, when I realize things like that, I always try to, I don't know, like, do the work to kind of overcome these kind of things, you know. And then for me, it was like, this thing has control over me, so it's time to say goodbye. Literally, I remember thinking, like, I cannot live like this.
That's amazing. That's, like, not... That's amazing, but that's amazing that you felt like that. Not the whole, like, shit before it. But, like, it's amazing that you have the right mindset and that you kind of pulled yourself out of that spiral.
For sure.
Because it's not easy.
No, it's not easy. And it takes just, like, this strength that... And it's also strength to, you know, accept yourself and love yourself. Because there's so many people and there's so much in the outside world trying to tell you that you're not good enough. And you have to kind of fight for, no, I am. I am good enough. And what are some things that you do or have done maybe on a daily basis or maybe not that's given you a tool to help you cope with these emotions that sometimes can arise of not feeling confident or not good enough in your skin?
Well, I go through different phases. Like I, at one point a few years ago, I unfollowed all influencers I was following before. Just because I was constantly comparing, like, my body and my skin and my face and all of that to them. And I was also, like, wanting to have more money so I could buy, like, the clothes that they were posting about and all of that. And I'm not saying everyone has to unfollow influencers because they, it's also their income and it's how they work. And there's a lot of them doing cool things out there, but that helped me, because I was, I was going through phases because my body fluctuates a lot. Like, a couple years ago, I was about 15 kilos heavier. And it wasn't my usual size. I just gained a lot of weight because I was living abroad. And then I came back home to Australia and I didn't fit any of my old clothes. And I just was feeling so ugly. I was feeling so, so, so bad about myself. And then I was, like, following all of these influencers who looked like freaking supermodels and had these insane bodies. And I just was like, I just had to unfollow them all and then just kind of, like, figure out what I wanted to do that works best for me. And then I started eating healthier and going to the gym and all of that stuff and figured out what worked best for my body. But that's one thing that really helped. And also, 'cause I can be quite a super anxious person and I can really get in my own head. And I sometimes go through these super big spirals, not even just about, like, how I look or how I belong, but just, like, life in general. And I honestly think, to get real deep for a second, I think a lot of this anxiety comes from, like, my childhood of, like, high school and, like, primary school situations of not fitting in and people not thinking I'm cool enough or great enough or whatever. And I think that still kind of holds me back a little bit today, where I struggle with, like, if someone doesn't reply for an hour, I'm like, they hate me. They hate me. This, like, it's so over. Like, we're never going to talk again. And I know. And like,
I'm like thinking about the time I didn't reply to her for an hour. Like,
no, I've gotten way better at it. I've had friends and people give me pep talks being like, Emma, we are busy. And so now I'm way, way, way better at it. Yeah, so things that I would also do is, like, we were just talking about this before we started recording, this book that really, really, really helped me a lot, Clarity and Connection by Young Pueblo. Yeah, he's on Instagram. He has, like, a lot of followers and he has this beautiful book and it's just, the book's kind of broken up into different sections. It's about, like, growth, unbinding, relationships, and I think, like, self-healing or self-reflection. And it just talks a lot about, like, you can't really move forward with your life or relationships in your life or anything unless if you first start loving yourself and also accepting that like everyone is on their own journey and you can't compare, you can't constantly assume negative things. And obviously it goes way deeper than that, but that book has been like a huge help for me every single time I'm falling into a negative like anxiety spiral.
Love it. I think I'm gonna link it to the episode so people can find it.
Yes,
because even I'm curious about it. Yeah. As well.
I bought that book for like 4 people now. Like I keep buying it for people because it's helped me so much.
Oh yeah, I love it. How was your relationship with your body living in Australia? Certainly I struggled a lot with it. How was it for you?
For me it was tricky because like I said, growing up in a surf town, a lot of skin is exposed and all of that. And my family's not Islamic, they're not Muslim, but that was the society they were raised in. Mm. So I always had problems with like my dad saying my skirt was too short or like, I don't know, like I wasn't really allowed to wear bikinis until I was a bit older, which is also a bit weird now that I think about it. But it was just a bit weird because comparing Australian skin exposure compared to Iran, it's just so polar opposite. So I was not sure like what was the right way to dress. And it was weird because if I would buy like a dress that was like tight or that my boobs were out and stuff, I felt guilty.
Yeah.
I felt like I was doing something wrong because I was told that that was so bad.
Wow.
Yeah, which is total opposite, I guess, of what you know.
No, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, was it the opposite for you?
I mean, in Brazil, you know, there is a lot of women who are super confident in their skin, especially at the beach.
Yeah.
Even my mother
wears amazing
thongs.
Amazing.
Bathing suits. And I'm like, whoa. So there was no shame about that. But I think for me more was just seeing all these girls super fit, looking so good. I felt like I wasn't good enough and I wanted to be like them. So I went through, you know, like huge health problems there because I was eating, feeling guilty. And then I was holding all those emotions in, and then at one point I like had the craziest stomach pain and was constipated, and I went to the hospital. They're like, it's gonna be like so much money to look at you. So then I just like went home and I kind of like healed it on my own.
Oh my god.
But you know, it was 1 week I literally was dying. And then this man that used to work near the cafe where I was working out, he was like, you know that every disease has something deeper to it. And I started crying because I knew what kind he was talking about. And obviously it's your stomach, it's your digestion. And then in hindsight now I can say, imagine eating something and regretting it every time you eat it. Like eating and regretting, eating and like everything that I put in my body was regret.
Yeah.
I was basically eating regret.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter what it was. It was just everything. So obviously, you know, that affected me because what I was thinking wasn't allowing me to digest the food. It was just like staying stuck. But and then I took the opposite. Then I became even worse because I still wanted to reach that skinny looking girl, hot girl summer, whatever, blah, blah, blah. When that happened, I was, okay, so now I'm going to be vegan. I'm only going to eat raw. And it just basically, I went even worse.
Yeah,
like, today,
yeah, yeah.
I can say that, obviously. And years after that, I still struggle with, and it only has been truly recently since 2 years ago that I completely healed my body image issues. But like, being that environment where everybody's wearing a bikini all the time, you feel like you need to look a certain way and everybody's looking good, so you're like, fuck. And it just wasn't really healthy for me, and I honestly had to get away eventually, and I left because I was not in a good headspace, and social media really affected me as well.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, hot girls on social media, hot girls at the beach, and I was just like, oh my god.
Yeah, social media does things to your body image.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And it's also interesting because in Sydney, like, because I lived in Germany for so long, so different to how people kind of care about their body and how they look versus Sydney. Because in Sydney, because it's a, you know, it's a beach city, it's really sunny. A lot of the time of the year, you have your skin exposed. So it's just so normal in Sydney to wake up at 5 a.m. and go to the gym before work. And like, at least where I was living in Germany, in Hamburg, I thought Hamburg was such a lazy city. Like, no, honestly, but I realized it makes such a big difference because they don't need to show their skin. It's fucking raining 90% of the year, you know?
For sure.
And I found that that made such a difference. Like, the weather and the climate of the city kind of like fucks up the anxiety of like girls having like about their body always being on, being on portray and being shown.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also a really interesting like cross-cultural thing I noticed.
I feel like every Australian person I've talked to, I mean, not every person, but a lot of the girls that I've spoken with, they've, you know, told me, like Mia, for example, and other friends that I've had, how just living there, how much it affects like the way that you perceive your body, because the standard is literally to another level. It's like up here.
Yeah. Like Sydney girls are, I'm just picturing so many of these girls back home. They're just like super like fit, skinny, like constantly fake tan, like get their highlights done for $400 once every 3 months. Every Friday go to this tanning salon and get a spray tan and like buy these like super expensive clothes to just wear once at like a restaurant on a Saturday night. And it's just like all about image. So I'm super glad I'm out of that. If, you know, people enjoy it, they enjoy it for sure. It's just so not for me because my mental health couldn't keep up with it. And it was just way too much pressure to constantly look good and constantly just feel good about my body. I couldn't do it. But I noticed when I moved back to Sydney, because I had 1 year back in Sydney before, between the years I lived in Germany. When I moved back after this, like, you know, healing year in Germany where I was, like, comfortable with myself, when I moved back, I like stopped hanging out that much with this like super princessy bougie type of group, and I started recognizing that I just feel so much better when I hang out with like the new people that I became friends with, who are just more my vibe, who don't have to constantly like do all these things to look amazing and be seen, and how many Instagram likes you're getting, and you know, you get to a friend's birthday lunch and everyone's spending 40 fucking minutes taking photos of each other, and like you know, you're just like, ah, what is going on?
Wow.
Yeah, so it's all crazy.
Can totally see that happen. I've witnessed, and I feel bad because I think sometimes, you know, people are in these positions but they don't even want to be in it, but they don't know any better.
They're comfortable.
It's just like, okay, that's what everybody's doing, so that's what I'm gonna be doing as well.
That was a really hard thing for me to experience when I went home after a year in Germany. I became that wanker, annoying friend that's like, everyone move overseas, it's amazing. You learn so much about yourself. And like, I reckon I would have been so annoying.
Yeah.
I would have been super annoying. And, but I was frustrated because, you know, I was trying to tell this to my friends who were still living at home at their parents' place and never really had to pay rent or do their own laundry. Mm-hmm. And, or have just like, you know, been going to the same places for their whole life and the same bars every weekend. And I realized how much happier I felt like trying different things. And I was really trying to like, almost like aggressively, like put that on my friends being like, come on, you can experience social. And then I had to get to a point where I realized they are content like this and they are happier to maybe not be put out of their comfort zone. And that's okay. And you can't really force this on anyone. And it was like, I really had to teach myself that, because otherwise I was getting frustrated with them, but it's none of my business. I know I just want what's best for them, but everyone is different. Everyone wants different things anyway.
For sure. To each their own.
Yeah, exactly.
I think maybe we can end on a positive note talk about the good things about, you know, living in a different country, having immigrant parents.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What would you say is something that at least was not, I mean, obviously there's many, many, many positive things, but one thing that you can probably think of, you know, the top of your head, that was something really positive about this experience that you had?
I just think it's like my education and knowledge in general on different cultures, and you have this extra level of empathy because and awareness.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what I'm really grateful for. And also, you know, things that other people would be super jealous of, like being able to speak another language. And, you know, growing up with like different like music and having cousins all over the world and family all over the world. I think it actually is quite cool. And there's not just one positive thing. There's so many. Yeah. What about for you?
For sure. I think for me, one of the greatest things was that obviously Brazil is such an underdeveloped country and there aren't a lot of opportunities. So when I moved to Canada, I knew that I had more opportunities and I really dove into that. So I started working really young, making my own money. And that is the only reason why I have been able to travel and do all of these great things that I've done. And now I live here in Barcelona and, you know, I have achieved so much in my life. Yeah. And it's only because I was able to move to Canada, because otherwise there was absolutely no way. And I think about it, if I would have only stayed in Brazil, wow.
You'd be so different.
I'd be so different. And I would have maybe, like, the first time I hopped on an airplane was to move to Canada. I had never been on a plane before. So maybe I wouldn't even had ever even been on a plane. Wow. Still maybe until today, you know. It just, there wasn't the opportunities. There weren't opportunities there. So for me, it's just, it's given me so much.
Yeah.
And I'll just truly forever be grateful.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I totally get that.
So this is the end of the podcast.
Yay!
I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Thank you for being here.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.